From the Fungin Studio, it's Acme Cast number 251. I'm Steven.
Oh, it's Adam here.
And I'm Rob.
And this is a brand new year with brand new co-hosts. Well, Adam's kind of a returning co-host, but Rob's first time on, long time listener, first time host.
First time host, second time on.
Oh,
was you it? Forgot.
Oh, man. No, I remember we recorded it back in the office, too. But I don't know. I thought AcmeCast was done. I really did. When we finished up in November, I was spending a lot more time up on the sales floor, a lot less time for recording and editing and stuff. But it was really the persistence of Rob every week, because he started listening at number 59.
No, it was, I want to say it was in the 40s.
Okay.
I remember it was during like a breakdown of Avengers Assemble, at which time I had never read anything Marvel at all, but I was like, I'm gonna listen to this. I don't care if it doesn't make sense, it will eventually. It was somewhere in the 40s, and I haven't missed an episode since.
And yeah, your insistence over the last 2 months, like, I don't know what to do, you know. And that at that point, it was probably about 4 years ago that you started listening, because going back to your origins, which I guess we had gone over before, but we can now get into further, that you had said that you and Riley were coming in. I started to remember you guys around the new 52.
Yeah. I'm not really sure the timeline. Like, the thing that I always kind of date it back to is the first single issue I ever bought was The Walking Dead number 63.
And now
or 61, maybe. Whichever one was like that. That was, I read all the trades and I was like, okay, I guess I have to start getting into individual issues. So whenever that first issue after that trade came out, that was my first single issue I ever bought.
And next Wednesday will be issue 150.
Yeah.
So it's crazy, I don't know, just putting things in perspective like that when you feel like, oh, I haven't been reading comics that long, or in the grand scheme of comics, you haven't been around that long, but you've been reading, or you've been around for more than half of the third longest running series right now. Like Spawn, Savage Dragon, and then Walking Dead pretty much are like the longest numbered series, and you've been around for more than half of that.
Yeah, it is kind of crazy, because I think about, like, I don't know, especially talking to you guys about comics, sometimes you guys will go into stuff where I'm like, man, I don't know anything about that. But I'm, you know, I guess I started reading comics consistently more than 5 years ago, 6 years ago, somewhere in there. It's kind of a long time, I guess.
Yeah, it's more than 20% of your life. You're a young fellow.
Yeah.
One of the most dated times I ever felt was we were watching the last couple episodes of Breaking Bad at our friend Josh and Danny's apartment, and Sharissa was over there, another friend of ours, and she's just like, Josh, how old are you? 27? You're old.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was already 30. I was like, oh, God. But Adam's not too far behind me.
No, like a year.
And Adam, a lot has changed for you probably since your last appearance on AcmeCast. You're now married. You're on your way to being a homeowner. You're much hairier than you were the last time.
Yes, a lot has changed.
And you've also become a prolific model assembler, which that was something that I feel like you were doing long before I knew you, like in high school and stuff. But now you're just like cranking them out. That's your release.
Yeah, that is my turn every screen off and just do something without electronics for bed thing.
Does it drive you crazy?
What?
I don't know, doing you know, cutting off the nibs and assembling everything.
Sanding it down. It's like a Zen thing, man.
Man, looking at the one that you made that's at the gym, like actually like really looking closely at it, it stresses me out. Like just to look at it. I'm like, man, I could not do this.
I did, I think, two or three Gundam models. Like I had a Wing Gundam Zero and I think just a regular Wing Gundam or whatever, and the custom one from it, the Endless Waltz movie, and I never had the patience for anything. There was like you said, like the nibs just hanging off. I had no patience to use paints, so I just got like a 4-pack of colored Sharpies and did the lines and stuff.
You could have just spray painted the whole thing.
Probably that monster. Probably that monster used toenail clippers to cut it off and everything.
Probably. But at that point, it's also weird now that you can just. I feel like there are some of those models probably like Toys R Us and stuff, or definitely like hobby shops where you can get them here. And I remember having to order those online from Japan and waiting like 6 to 8 weeks for my models to show up.
There are a few that I've done that. A really good website sells them cheap, but takes like 2 months to get here. So I'll forget about it. And then all of a sudden a package shows up.
I feel like if I order something online and it's not there within like a day, I'm like, they forgot about it. It's not coming. It's not coming. The shipping information has not been updated in 2 hours.
Oh no, these things. There's no tracking info or anything. Yeah. It's like an email saying it's shipped, and you just gotta wait.
Carly was furious, and she was talking about it last night with somebody at the shop that my Apple Pencil made it from Shanghai to Greensboro in 2 days, and I was like, "Yeah, I mean, it's in Shanghai now. It's in Tennessee now. It's here." Like just watching it go, and she was. I don't know why she was so upset about that, but she was like, it's not right. There are people starving and your Apple Pencil gets a first class seat across the Pacific Ocean. It's like, yeah, man, it's the way it needs to be. I wanted to kind of put a cap on, even though we didn't really do comics at the table for the last couple months, and get an idea of what people enjoyed this past year. And everyone has subjective top 10 lists, but as a retailer myself, I feel like the great barometer of what people really enjoyed or what people really sold. Because as a retailer, if you order a million copies of something and it doesn't sell, retailers are not going to vote for that for the best thing of the year. They're going to be annoyed by it and hate it forever. So the Diamond Gem Awards, which is the main distributor for comics, I feel like their categories as voted on by retailers are a good indication. So the comic book of the year for 2015 under $3 was Paper Girls number one. And I feel like that's really hard to argue with. I think it was 40 pages for $2.99, just like Saga number one and We Stand on Guard number one, where Brian K. Vaughan is obviously in the position at this point where he can split things with his artists and he can take the hit for that extra content. And that's something that other image creators like Robert Kirkman have really adopted on Outcast number one, and it makes for excellent launches, and I've really enjoyed Paper Girls.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, no.
Man, weighing in on his first book, and you know, after 250 episodes, and we get an meh.
No, okay, that was kind of just kidding. I think Paper Girls was really good, but I kind of feel like if anybody else had written it, I don't really know that I would have cared, because I feel like there were some things about it that I was like, that's okay. And kind of like the last page of issue one, I was like, that's kind of silly. You know, I wasn't immediately just like, I love this, like other things by him I've read. But knowing that he is so good, I'm like, yeah, this is going to be great. But I don't know. I mean, it was good. I'm just being a jerk.
I mean, I was never one for, I guess part of it feels like, and it's probably just because it's set in the 80s, it feels very like Super 8. Even though Super 8 was like going back to the 70s, it has that great feel to it. And the colors that are in there from, I think, Matt Wilson colors that one, are really excellent. And I just like the way also that Brian K. Vaughan engages people through the letters column and stuff in a different way, where it's not like a gimmick or anything, but I missed the window. I kept saying I was going to send away for the paper boy or paper girl.
I didn't do it either.
Membership card. And I never did. It's okay. I still have my Krogan's Adventures card in my wallet at all times.
Got mine somewhere. Two of them, actually. Yeah, I really enjoy Paper Girls, and it's a real solid book. The only complaint I have about it, I think it was like second or third issue, they kept telling you what year it is over and over. Hey, Reagan. Hey, Back to the Future, or whatever it was. They just kept naming pop culture things.
I feel like anything has to do that. Like the first season of Mad Men is like, have you been to see the apartment yet? Have you done this? Like it felt like every episode of the first season of Mad Men had some like 1969 reference just thrown in there. Or 1968, whatever it was. But I've really enjoyed it. I'm not sure I want to sit down and decode the language. I definitely don't want to just go online and read somebody else's decryption of the language in there. But I feel like the last couple of issues have had more and more of that, the alien font in there that I know you can crack, but I haven't.
Is it an actual, like, crypto quote kind of thing? Or is it just, like, letter replacement? As in, like...
It's not like dupe where it's just, like, whatever.
No, dupe you can break,
too. Oh, that's
too.
Right. That's right. Somebody did that.
Because, what was the book? Jeff Lemire. Trillium?
Trillium, yeah.
Yeah, that was just, like, a letter replacement with, like, different symbols. And I, as I tend to do with miniseries, I let it stack up and then just read it all in one, maybe 2 days. And by the end of Trillium, I could read the... Like the symbols, you know, like whatever.
Without
like
writing it out?
Yeah, well, I did write it out. And okay. I've still, like, in my little black box for comics, I've still got that piece of paper where I, like, decoded the first, like, you know, issue or whatever. But then by issue, like, 4 or 5, I think it was out of 8, so somewhere around that halfway point, I was able to just look at it and read it. And I was proud of myself. I was like, oh, man, I learned a new language. And then Riley was like, well, no, you just learned to read English with different symbols.
Yeah. I think it is just letter replacement. And Jared Fletcher, who I believe is the letterer on that book, was at Heroes. And there was already somebody at that signing who had broken it. And he was like, yeah, that's cool. Like, I wish people hadn't done it that fast. He felt like it wasn't as hard as it should have been when they could do it just based on the first issue. But he said there is a lot in there that will make more sense if you do have that code.
Oh, that's cool.
Now I'm going to go back and reread it. I'm going to make a psycho detective wall and try and decipher this stuff.
Yeah. The top comic of 2015 over $3.99, I think it was $4.99 or $5.99, was Star Wars #1 by Jason Aaron and John Cassaday. And I feel like Star Wars really hit its stride on that second arc with Stuart Immonen on the art. Mm-hmm. John Cassaday, he was in, you know, 2004, my favorite artist.
Astonishing X-Men.
Yeah, Astonishing X, or the first two arcs of Astonishing X-Men. And then I felt like he just kept taking more and more shortcuts from then on, to the point where I think in a series and a licensed property that really defined copying actors' likenesses. Like, there was no Luke Skywalker truly before there was Mark Hamill. There was no Han Solo truly before there was Harrison Ford. I don't really know why John Cassaday was the choice to start that off, whereas Stuart Immonen, even though he does do a more stylized, cartoonish version of those characters, you could tell who they were more easily than John Cassaday.
Yeah.
But I also think that those comics did an excellent job getting me excited for Force Awakens before Force Awakens came out. Rob, have you seen Force Awakens?
Yeah, I've been meaning to watch Star Wars. No, honestly, I saw Empire Strikes Back when I was 6-ish, maybe twice.
And that was it?
That's it. I didn't like it. And so I always said, like, oh, I just don't really like Star Wars. And, man, I'm really failing this whole podcast thing right now by saying this, but I mean, I don't know. Like, I was talking to Riley about it, actually, and he was like, yeah, but have you watched it as an adult? I was like, well, no. He was like, well, man, you should. And then that conversation was when I was like,
well, now
yeah, maybe I'll watch Star Wars.
I kind of want you to just go watch Force Awakens.
Because honestly, if you said what happens in Empire Strikes Back, I'm like, well, he's got to hit that one little thing, and it's like hard to hit. He's got to fly by it just right.
No, that's A New Hope.
Yeah, that's the first one.
Yeah, that was not Empire Strikes Back.
See, that's what I'm talking about. I don't know anything about Star Wars.
A New Hope. Now that's, I'm, then now I've seen I'm
that. So more curious. Oh, Empire Strikes Back is episode 5.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Never seen it.
Well, now if I have to, I'm going to buy you a ticket to go see Force Awakens to have that perspective as somebody that doesn't know anything.
Yeah. I do know the big spoiler, though, or one of them. I found out early because I really wanted to tell somebody, but I decided not to be that jerk.
Well, that Star Wars number one was both the 2015 top dollar comic book and the comic book of the year, over $3. And Paper Girls was also the best new comic book series, best licensed comic book of the year, Rick and Morty number one, which Star Wars is technically a licensed comic book, so I don't really know how that slips by there, but Rick and Morty is one that we can't keep in stock. It's not like a massive seller the way Star Wars is, but we're constantly having to reorder Rick and Morty, even at this point, even though the first trade is out, Rick and Morty 1 through 5 for people. And it is a cool show. I know a lot of people feel like, oh, if you're into comics, Rick and Morty is the thing to watch. And it is created by Rob Schrab and Dan Harmon, who did Community and Scud the Disposable Assassin years and years ago. But I just think Venture Brothers plays on those tropes a lot better. Venture Brothers, which is finally coming back January 31st for season 6. I think it's been about 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
I don't think there has been a new season since Adam and I saw the Venture Brothers, Jackson Public, Doc Hammer panel. Yeah, at New York Comic Con 2012.
Yes, 2012.
Yeah, I don't think there's been. There was the Halloween special, and I don't think there's been any other Venture Brothers in the 4 years since then.
Do you think that's going to be a good thing that it's coming back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're
some Venture Brothers are better than no Venture Brothers.
That's a good point.
Best All Ages series for 2015 went to Lumberjanes.
I can agree with that.
I don't know. I dropped off of that one.
Oh, personally. They just introduced a new character, Seafaring Karen. It's the waterfront instructor, whatever you want to call it.
I think the only All Ages book I read or have been reading is Little Nemo. And I mean, I think that book is incredible, probably because I loved Little Nemo's Adventures in Slumberland when I was a kid. I probably watched it once a week, you know, when I was a kid.
That's one that I feel like I constantly get confused with the Pagemaster.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, I've never seen the Pagemaster, I don't think. Like, I know what it is, but Little Nemo's animated. Well, wait, Pagemaster is too, partially.
Well, it starts out live action, right? Then it goes animated. Yeah.
So you guys were watching that, and I watched Rockadoodle Doo and was happy.
Oh man, Rockadoodle! that was the other one. It was Rockadoodle and Little Nemo. That, like, every time I talk about those two movies, most people don't know about it. But Rockadoodle is like, doesn't hold up as much now. It's on Netflix, and it's not as good as I remember it.
I'm not even wanting to look at it.
Yeah.
Best licensed paperback or hardcover went to the Mad Max Fury Road reprint. And Mad Max, whatever. I didn't read any of the comics. I was not on board. We were just talking about Making a Murder that's on Netflix right now, in the documentary series that I guess both of you guys are watching.
And yeah,
it's hit that point of saturation where it's so hyped up by everyone just being like, you gotta watch it, you gotta watch it, that I'm like, no, I'm not gonna watch it. And that's how I didn't go into Mad Max with any expectations. I think the only one I've seen was the first Road Warrior movie, which I didn't really like that much, and I know isn't really the whole dystopian future that Mad Max and Thunderdome and all that stuff are. So I had no expectation, but everyone was so excited by the time the lights went up on that movie that I was just like, nope, didn't like it. Yep. Best original graphic novel of the year. This is a huge disappointment, in my opinion, that it went to Batman Earth 1, Volume 2 by Geoff Johns and Gary Frank. And not that it was a bad story, but I feel like this is just, after you see Paper Girls winning Best New Series, Lumberjanes winning Best All Ages Series, Rick and Morty winning Best Licensed Comic, it's like the blinders are just on for best original graphic novel in this case. Like, Rage of Ultron was up for this as well from Marvel, but to say that that's the best original graphic novel when books like The Sculptor came out just blows my mind. Something that's so much more artistic and so much more passionate than just the next Batman graphic novel.
Well, but people probably show up just because it's Batman. So from a retailer perspective, I bet way more of those sold across the country.
Say, what's the metric that's being used to measure this? Sales or like actual like?
No, this was votes. Like there were categories for all of these with like, I don't know if retailers picked them or Diamond picked them or what, but there were other options. But yeah, it's just disappointing to me that this seems like the most like cookie cutter. Like, yes, like that seems more like the choice from like Wizard Magazine in 1998 than we should be dealing with today. Best reprint went to The Walking Dead Compendium Volume 3. Definitely awesome that best indie graphic novel of the year went to We Can Never Go Home from Black Mass Studios, which that book is awesome.
I had no clue that it was that popular, I guess, but I mean, that's pretty cool too, because it's a really small publisher, right?
Yeah. And I think at times this year that really hurt them as far as getting things out on time and getting the right number of copies around. And I know they had the same kind of problems with Space Riders, which was their other big kind of hit this year. And it was a little too big, too fast. If you heard about, I guess there hasn't even been a podcast since then, but during local comic shop day, they were the only ones that really got the concept of that. I feel like almost every other publisher just did a variant cover to a book that was already out. But for local comic shop day, Black Mask did exclusive hardcovers for Space Riders and We Can Never Go Home. But then again, with them being as small as they are and logistical problems and stuff, they ended up, one of the guys that's one of the publishers and writers for We Can Never Go Home lives in New York, and he took a bus from New York to DC, and then the other guy involved flew from Nashville to DC and got picked up, and then they drove together from DC to Nashville to the printers where they picked up the hardcovers in a U-Haul, and then drove from DC to Nashville where they then individually boxed all of the orders for all of the publishers and sent them out in time for local comic shop day.
Wow. That's insane.
Huh. Yeah. But it also shows, you know, the DIY spirit that they have and the passion for the projects. Best manga went to Attack on Titan Volume 16, which I have not read or watched, but I hear is very, very good.
It is. Yes.
Smitty just chimed in, who is now at the drawing board here in the Fungin. Making comics as we speak. Best anthology, I feel like, is, I've always felt like, is whatever. It went to Island Number One that Brandon Graham edits for Image Comics and Dark Horse Presents, and a few other books were in the mix there, but there hasn't been a super strong anthology, I don't think, in years.
I honestly prefer the Vertigo Quarterly Sound Effects this year than to Island.
I don't think I've ever read an anthology I enjoyed, honestly. Like, I think by the time I'm done with them, I always think I'm just going to be done reading comics.
Yeah, you were just saying that about Dark Horse Presents number 14, which had a great 8-page Hellboy story in there.
Yeah, well, that was awesome. That was awesome. But I didn't realize that was at the end of the book, so I skimmed the entire thing just to get to that. By the time I got to it, I didn't even really want to read it.
The best free comic book day book for 2015, in their opinion, was the Fight Club Goon Strain special from Dark Horse. Personally, I liked Secret War Zero, especially the Acme Comics exclusive variant with the ad designed by me on there. Best trade book of the year went to Darth Vader and Friends. And best statue was the Joker and Harley Bombshells version. Best toy of the year went to the Guardians of the Galaxy Dancing Groot figure. And best toy line of the year was Pop Figures from Funko, which are kind of unavoidable in this world.
Yeah, I'm looking at two of them in every direction I look, almost.
Yeah. And then getting into more of the numbers stuff, which Rob said was always one of his favorite parts of Acme Cast when we crunched it. When you look at all of 2015, I think one of the biggest stories and one of the things that we'll remember is there's not really a big two anymore. It's not really Marvel and DC. The Titan publisher is now really Marvel Comics, with DC falling more into a best of everyone else category sales-wise, because Marvel, for retail dollars sold, was at 38.74%, and unit share, the actual number of comics they sold, was at 41.82%, whereas DC was not even breaking into the 30th percentile anymore. Trailing behind them were Image at around 10% for both retail and market share. IDW behind them. I'm surprised. No, I'm not surprised about that. They were about 1% higher on retail share because everything they sell is at least $3.99. Dark Horse in fifth with 3.79% of the retail share and 3.10% of the unit share. Dark Horse is about to be overtaken by Boom Studios by less than a percentage at this point, and that goes to, as we've said, the identity problem that Dark Horse has had.
Yeah, I feel like Dark Horse is kind of like meandering. You know, it's Hellboy is obviously, like, I guess the bread and butter now, but
with Hellboy and Hell being announced that it's going to be coming to an end in 2016, and then Mignola is going to step away from comics for a year after that. That's just one more problem where they lost Star Wars, now they lost that.
Well, I kind of question with a lot of, like, the Hellboy titles or the Hellboy universe titles, like, how much Mignola really has to do with it. You know, because it seems like it, I mean, you know, this is just total speculation, but my guess has always kind of been like, he might just look at the story and be like, yeah, okay, I'm cool with that, you know, or whatever. Or maybe he's got like, oh, this is where Hell on Earth is going to end. And then, you know, just take us there or whatever. And so I don't know. I'm not really, I guess, worried about all the supporting books, because I feel like that's probably not even going to change. But I mean, anything other than that, Dark Horse I've read, you know, Mind Management was awesome. It's done.
Well, John Arcudi had said that he was going to be leaving BPRD too, right?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. Arc.
So then you have both the creative forces behind BPRD leaving, Mignola leaving Hellboy behind. Goon comes out when it comes out. They don't have Star Wars anymore. There hasn't been anything going on in Buffy for 3 or 4 years now. And it really is just like, what are they doing?
Yeah, and even like this most recent Dark Horse Presents, or what I think is the most recent Dark Horse Presents with the Hellboy story, you know, I read a page or two of every single one of those stories that was in there, and I did not enjoy a single one. You know, it's like they don't seem to have a direction, and they can't get people to come to them with creator-owned stuff that seems like it's worth much.
The only hope that I really have is that I said these same things about Image Comics probably 8 years ago, for sure, up to 6 years ago, when all they were putting out was Spawn, Savage Dragon, Walking Dead, Invincible, and then a bunch of creator-owned books that I did not care about. So there's always that opportunity for that new lifeblood to come in. I wonder if, you know, for Scott Alley to have come under so many personal allegations earlier this year and really losing his stable of guys, and the guys that Scott Alley was like the personal contact to Mike Mignola, the personal contact to Joss Whedon, the personal contact to Gerard Way. And when those guys aren't putting anything out, maybe there is room for somebody else to step in to be a liaison to a new generation of talent.
Yeah.
I know one of the things that Jermaine and I had talked about was if they should bring back the Dark Horse Legends imprint when they had John Byrne and Mike Allred, and that's where Hellboy came, or the, yeah, Dark Horse Legends and Maverick. That's where Hellboy got started and all of that, that they could give a group of creators carte blanche to really jumpstart things.
Do you know how that works for Dark Horse? Because, you know, from my understanding with Image, it's your thing. We're helping you put it out. Like, what, like, does Mike Mignola own Hellboy? Or is it just kind of like, Like, if someone takes something to Dark Horse, is it theirs or is it Dark Horse?
Brian Smith, would you care to weigh in on this as somebody that has a future project coming out from Dark Horse Comics?
Hi. My project with Dark Horse is owned by us, and we're only having Dark Horse act as a publisher for the books only. We own all the other rights to do whatever we want with it. We could shop it around. They did offer us like a Dark Horse like books creator deal, wherein they would own a percentage of everything, and then also have the like first look rights to shop it like in other media. But at this point, like, and we didn't even get like a page rate or anything from them. We just were producing the book, and they're just printing it. Like we're paying for it ourselves, essentially.
You think some of that has to do with what Image has done the past couple of years? Like they're just like, well, this is how it works now. This is how we get talent.
Yeah, well, that is something that we specifically asked for. Like they wanted it to be more theirs, I think, and then we wanted it to be more ours because that seems to be a model that we can work with. We know how to make comics, and we have our own contacts and whatever else. Like, so we could try to pursue it as much as we can on our own. Yeah, for like what we were doing and for like the size book it is and just the amount of labor it was, like if we were to get it paid like a page rate from them, we'd already be so far in the hole like before we recoup any, you know, profit on the actual book. So kind of just made sense for us that way. But as far as like Mike Mignola, I have no idea.
Right.
Like, that guy, I mean, Dark Horse made those movies, the Hellboy movies. The Dark Horse logo is in those films, right? Like,
I don't remember. I'm not sure.
I'd have to.
I don't know.
I know Mike Mignola doesn't like talking about the movies.
Yeah.
Because I've heard him say that a couple times. It's like, please don't ask me about the movies or whatever.
Like, I honestly don't know. I would assume at that point in time, like, before, like, you know, the current Image deal, like, is what it is, that Dark Horse probably does own some percentage of the rights to Hellboy. But, like, it is clearly, like, Mike Mignola created and, you know, he did it. There's no disputing that. That's all I got.
Can we talk about our personal favorite books that started last year?
Absolutely.
My one I enjoy a lot, and I think it just started in November, was Tokyo Ghost.
Tokyo Ghost, that one is Rick Remender and Sean Gordon Murphy.
Correct.
The first two issues didn't really grab me. It seemed kind of like futurist gobbledygook, honestly. But then that third issue had a lot of heart in it.
Yeah.
And that's where I really got hooked into the series. I think it'll read great as a trade.
Oh, definitely.
And probably more so than it did as issues. Is that one only 5 or 6 issues? Is it a mini or is it an ongoing?
I
think
as far as I know, it's ongoing. I didn't see a 5 out of 6 or anything. Okay. But I've been wrong before.
That one's been high quality. Rob, what is your favorite book now that X is no longer printed?
Yeah, rest in peace, X. I'm not sure. Well, my favorite book, I guess, of last year didn't start last year, but Black Science, I think, the past, like, I think it kind of hit a lull towards the beginning of last year, and I was, like, borderline almost done with it. And then towards the end of, like, whatever story arc was in the spring, it got so awesome. And I feel like it's just, like, the past 6-ish issues have been incredible. And I mean, that's probably my favorite book I'm reading. As far as ones that started last year, Huck, that's 2 issues in, oh, I think is incredible. Jupiter's Legacy, I believe, is the newer of the two, Jupiter's Circle, Jupiter Legacy. I think that's incredible. I mean, in my mind, Mark Miller can't do anything bad. And I don't really care for him as a person or like his personality that he's put out.
I hate, you know, you want to talk about the engagement of the backup material. The junk that's in the back of those books.
But you know, I even feel like the way he is now isn't like he was a couple years ago. Like a couple years ago, I feel like the first couple Mark Miller things I read, anything that I read by him, he just seemed like the cockiest jerk. And I almost feel like he's come down from that a little bit, or at least he's not showing it as much. You know, I don't know if he hired a PR person that told him that or what, but I don't know. It's like I don't want to like his material as much as I do, but I mean, I think everything he does is incredible.
I think the end of Wanted, like, kind of set the tone for who he felt he had to be, and in that way, like, It was like, and this is you, your name here, like, you suck, you yeah. hate your job, like, turn everything around, just be an outlaw. And that was kind of his attitude doing Superior and Nemesis and Kingsman and stuff like that. And that's what's made him millions and millions of dollars in yeah. Hollywood. But now he is comfortable enough to tell the stories that he is capable of telling. And I think that's, like you said, between Jupiter's Circle and Jupiter's Legacy and Huck and
Starlight. Starlight. Yeah, that was awesome too. That one was a totally different tone, like surprisingly so. You know, mm-hmm. I feel like everything he writes is very adult themed and very real. Like mm-hmm. that's what I think makes Jupiter's Legacy so great, is it's superheroes, but it's real. You know, it's like, If these people were real, what kind of issues would they have going on in their lives? And I can't even stars. What did you just say?
Starlight?
Yeah, Starlight. Yeah, that was one that I feel like was almost borderline all ages. You know, it was mm-hmm. just like a very innocent kind of story that was like touching and yeah, light almost.
Me and Adam were reading Jeff Parker and Doc Shaner's Flash Gordon, and that was like the perfect like. Like that book got canceled by Dynamite, and then it was like, here you go, here's Flash Gordon 30 years in the future.
Yeah.
And it was a perfect, you know, that's the kind of things they were pulling on, and it was a perfect companion to that. What were my other ones for 2015? I had The Sculptor, I already mentioned. Paper Girls, Star Wars, we already talked about. Southern Bastards is so good. Shut up, Rob.
I don't like it.
He's sneering over
I don't like Jason Aaron. I'll just say it. I've never read anything by him I thought was good.
Southern Bastards is so good.
Was Witches last year as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was a frightening book.
Witches, and we talked about this because they just did that Image Proof, like the oversized black and white edition. It's kind of like an artist edition, but really low rent and only for one issue at a time. They did one for Black Science number one. I think they did Walking Dead number one, which makes no sense because it was just a blown up version of the first issue. It's already in black and white. But Witches was one where I know people were like, I can't really tell what's going on. And they would show the color process in the back. And it was like Jock's art was awesome, but once Matt Hollingsworth got in there doing colors, it was just so much going on, and he ruined that original art. And being able to see that first issue in just black and white, it's like, I wish I could read the whole story again like this for the first time.
Yeah,
and I'm sure I would have enjoyed it more.
I didn't see that, but it was really that much better?
It's a huge, huge difference.
Wow.
Like, we'll go back up to the shop and I'll see if we still have it around. And Transformers versus G.I. Joe, which is awesome. That is what comics should be. It's so kinetic. It's so energetic. It has everything that I wish every comic was in Transformers versus G.I. Joe.
I should read that issue then. It's been sitting in a pile for a year now.
I mean, that was something that I love when a free comic book day book knocks me on my butt. And I remember that. I didn't even know because I wasn't working at the store when Umbrella Academy Zero was ordered. And I had no idea until we were unpacking boxes. And I was like, oh, a James Jean cover. Oh, Gerard Way, My Chemical Romance. And then reading that for the first time, having no expectations. And I was just like, this is amazing. I can't wait. And that's how I felt with Transformers versus G.I. Joe Zero, where I was just like, Chom Scioli, I know that name, but this looks like Jack Kirby drawing Transformers. What? Bumblebee's head just got torn off?
Spoilers. And
Soundwave is wearing it around his neck like a trophy? This is insane. But one of the other things that we're going to try to do moving forward is kind of have a book club, because that's something that seems like an obvious choice. Other stores like Heroes or Third Eye obviously pull it off, but it's never really come together in a big form. But we wanted to be able to bring that element into Acme, and so we're going to try it through the podcast. So we're going to tell you guys in advance what we're going to be reading. We hope you'll read along with us, and then we'll discuss what we read each week. And one thing that I've been meaning to get back around to is Preacher before the TV show comes out in May of this year. So I did a little bit of digging on the history of Preacher because I feel like it's one of those things, that and Sandman, that are Vertigo properties that I've heard as long as I've been reading comics for 12 years or 15 years or whatever it's been now. Like, they're going to make a Preacher movie. They're going to make a Sandman movie, and nothing ever happens. And there have been so many false starts that I'm not even going to believe, even though a pilot has been shot and now they're in production on the series. I'm not going to believe it until I see it for myself. Like, yeah, Lock and Key had a pilot, and I've never seen that.
Yeah, I remember reading, you know, when I read Preacher, which was probably 2010-ish, I remember reading online while I was still reading the series, like, oh yeah, this so-and-so just bought the rights. Like, it's actually finally going to get made, and nothing.
I've personally never actually finished the series because I actually used to just sit in the back of Acme and read trades all Saturday. And y'all just didn't have the last trade, so I never finished the series.
I read Preacher for the first time probably sitting in Borders and Barnes & Noble when I first started reading comics. Libraries didn't really have comics the way they do nowadays, and I couldn't afford everything that I wanted at Acme. So I would just go to Borders on High Point Road like 2 or 3 hours before my shift started at the Outback Steakhouse at the mall, and I would just read in the Borders, and no one would ever bother me or ask me to buy something or ask me if I needed help. Yeah. And then I would go to work for the night. So that's where I read Preacher for the first time, and I have the premier hardcovers they did of it, and I've never actually read them. So this will be a good opportunity to start that. So for next week, we're going to be reading Preacher Book One as it stands now, which is like,
which is the equivalent of two trades. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So what's issue numbers on that? 1 through what?
Is that what you have? You have issues?
I have nothing.
Oh, okay. Preacher. Yeah, I read Preacher. It was the second thing I read. Walking Dead was why I started reading comics, and then I started reading Preacher, and I was like, wow, this is like an incredible movie, but better. It takes longer. Or, you know, I haven't read it since then. So at that time in my comics reading life, I thought everything I read was incredible. You know, so of course I thought Preacher was the best thing I'd ever seen. So I'm really interested to get back into it and see if my opinion of it changes at all. Because it seems like I don't like anything anymore. But I mean, I assume I'll still love Preacher.
Who was the artist on that? I know Garth Ennis wrote it. I can't remember the...
Steve Dillon. And Glenn Fabry was the cover artist. Book one is the first 12 issues.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's what we'll be covering on next week's show. And real quickly, just because, you know, I did my research. I prepared for this. The first version of Preacher, which started in 1995... By May of 1998, Garth Ennis had completed 3 drafts of the script based largely on the first story arc. And we never saw that. That was produced by Electric Entertainment. It was going to be directed by Rachel Talalay, who I've never heard of, and the production company I've never heard of. But obviously, that fizzled out. And then Miramax had the rights, and that never went anywhere. And then after Miramax went away, HBO picked it up, and that's probably what I heard about most in November 2006 through like 2009. And you had heard every issue is going to be a different episode, and there's going to be 5 seasons and 12 episodes a season, and a different director is going to do each one. So Quentin Tarantino can direct an episode, and Kevin Smith can direct an episode. And at that point, Mark Steven Johnson, who had also directed Daredevil already and would go on to direct Ghost Rider, yikes. And had also directed Simon Birch before Daredevil. Seems like an unlikely choice, but he was a main producer on it. And then after he dropped out, Columbia Pictures picked it up. And Sam Mendes, who is an Academy Award-winning director for American Beauty, Road to Perdition, Jarhead, Revolutionary Road, Skyfall, Spectre, obviously would have been a better fit for it, but he was going to direct it for Columbia Pictures, and then that fell apart, and now because of the success of The Walking Dead, we get the current version that'll be coming to AMC, starring Dominic Cooper and Joseph Gilgan, who was amazing on The Misfits. I will watch anything that he is in, because after he had to replace Nathan as Rudy in Series 3 of Misfits, it's like, stepping into the biggest role on that show. You can't imagine that show existing without it, but his role as Rudy on there, he just made everything his own and made you forget all about Nathan by the time you got to the end of series 5 of Misfits.
I mean, think about like the state of comic book properties in live action media now compared to 1998.
Yeah.
You know, like it's probably pretty awesome that we're just now going to get it. Like it's probably going to be about as good as it could be. I wish it was an HBO series because I feel like there's certain parts of it that HBO could probably really do well that we may not get from AMC, but I mean, you know, AMC does good stuff.
They still do Walking Dead and they still do, and they did Breaking Bad.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean,
I feel like there's nothing so terrible in Preacher that you couldn't show it on AMC.
Yeah, that's
that I remember, but we'll see.
Again, we'll have to reread this. Or could be.
Yeah. I remember there being some themes, especially with the family. You know, the cousins, the super redneck cousins. I remember there being some pretty gruesome stuff in there. But honestly, it's been 5-6+ years since I've read it. I don't remember a ton. It's funny because I just know like, oh, yeah, The Preacher. That's incredible. It's like the best thing ever. And when I watched the trailer for the TV show, I was like, oh, yeah, that's what it's about. Like, you know, it's like I had completely you could have asked me, give me a summary. And I'm like, it's this one dude. He's got stringy curly hair.
I would think, though, you know, Outcast is also in production at Showtime. The things I'm most curious to see in the show is like the voice is the product of a devil and a rogue devil and a rogue angel having sex and stuff and being birthed into existence, and the blasphemous and supernatural nature of the series is what I would expect to be watered down more than any violence or gore.
Right, yeah. And I mean, I think that aspect of it is really cool too, but you know, I guess we'll see what we get.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to do it for our first episode back, but in the meantime, you can find us online at facebook.com/AcmeGreensboro, on Tumblr at acmecomics.tumblr.com, and on Twitter at acmecomics. Yeah, still got it. And you can find our upcoming convention appearances at the Comics Pro Annual Meeting and Charlotte MiniCon on January 30th on our website at acmecomics.com. And you can hear this episode as well as the 250 other episodes of AcmeCast and all the episodes of Instant Depths, Adam's podcast that we will also be returning to shortly on our website at acmewaveprojector.com. There you go.
I gotta sharpen my pencil too. Hold on.
All right, I got about 15-20 minutes before I got here.